Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 512. I'm Adam, and you shouldn't have let me press all those buttons. And here's Debbie Melrose.
Hello. I'm sorry, where are we quoting from?
Well, weren't you not on last week?
It's the science facts.
I want facts to know which episode, because that could have been any episode of Doctor Who.
Well, as we're doing...
That's how I took it, any episode.
Okay, right, I've got my quote then. Can you see? He trapped her inside a mirror, every mirror. If ever you look at your reflection and see something move behind you, just for a second, that's her. That's always her.
Anything else? Want to carry on for a little bit more of the script?
Oh, yeah, I'll do the whole thing.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
He's like fire and ice and rage. He's like the night and the storm and the heart of the sun. He's ancient and forever. He burns at the center of time and he can see the turn of the universe. And he's wonderful.
Oh, so you stopped. Okay.
I know that
we're doing the whole script.
You can see that. Mary Lang.
Heard that. I could hear Kirby saying it. Yes.
That's you, Mary.
It's Monday, November 10th, 1913, and you are completely human, sir.
That's me, completely human.
Poor old Ben Shoveler.
Change back!
Pardon? <I'm sorry>. Kirby's back, did he say?
I've been practicing.
I bet you have.
Good.
Didn't get it. I didn't hear what you said. Sorry.
I said change back.
Oh, that was good. Oh, hang on. That deserves one of these. Oh, I missed it. Sorry.
I recognise the quote.
Yeah, we did.
I didn't understand it because he said it like he was growling. Now I recognise the quote, but I didn't quite hear it. I didn't. Oh, never mind. Welcome to the show.
Can I be completely honest on this? Right?
Yes.
Seriously. Literally seconds before I joined the call, I googled the episode on BBC iPlayer, fast forwarded it until that point, and just pressed play and just was going to quote the first thing that anyone said.
So. Using your initiative, I like to see that. Of course, we're going to be doing Human Nature Family Blood in a minute, but we're going to talk as much as of anybody who watched it was going to talk very briefly about what we thought of the first episode of Flux, Doctor Who Flux, right, was on last week. The title of which escapes me because I've been quite busy, but I'm sure Kirby knows what it's called.
The Halloween something or other.
Halloween something or other. I remember the Halloween word being in there.
Halloween flivered me jib.
Okay, what I thought of it, I think I said this last week, that it was quite a... enjoyable, thrilling sort of episode. Quite a lot going on in it. I'd say it was fairly on the edge of the seat. It was certainly better than some of the recent stuff we've had to watch with the 13th Doctor. Not her fault. But it was very pretty to look at, as modern science fiction dramas seem to be, because they're all competing with each other for the cinematographic side of things. And they're certainly keeping up with other things.
Lucky you're not involved in that side of things, Adam, isn't it?
What's saying cinematographic? That's quite a long...
Cinematographic.
That's quite a word, that. Anyway, but I quite enjoy... I like the new characters. I'm not sure about the pantomime villains at the moment, whether I like them or not. I think they look good.
But they're brilliant. The geodes. That's what Isla called them.
The spiky guys?
No, she called them the geodes.
No, the pantomime villains.
Geode.
Yeah, they're very...
Geodes. If you look at the ladies... makeup, wow, it's astonishing.
Oh yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's good makeup. I'm not sure if I might not think a little bit too pantomimey, but what comes to that obviously later
no,
on in the series.
Not.
Yes, they are.
Ah.
Oh no, they're not.
I like John Bishop. I think he certainly plays the character down, which makes it more believable character. I don't like the fact it's in Liverpool. I hate seeing Anfield. And in Doctor Who, I hate seeing Anfield full stop. So that I really, really detested that part of it. I really do not want to see Anfield. I've been there. It's horrible.
Give yourself a ding.
Horrible place. The people are horrible. They painted all these people that are close to Anfield being quite nice. They were horrible to me. They lobbed a stone at our coach and shattered glass over to a couple of very nice young ladies I was sat quite close to. It could have been me they lobbed that blooming rock at. And it was only Southampton. It wasn't Man United, Liverpool. It was Southampton. So they lob a rock. Anyway, so I'm ranting.
Anfield threw a stone at him.
A rock. They threw... Basically, it was... those things, paving slab. basically lobbed it at the coach, which shattered the glass window, and fortunately bounced off at that point. All the shattered glass went over a couple of teenage girls who were sat on by that window. That could have been anyone.
Did you offer to wipe it off them, Adam?
No, I was furious. Anyway, but I don't like Liverpool.
Hello, girls. Would you like me to wipe you? I see you have some glass.
I have had a nice experience in Liverpool. I did have a nice experience when we went to the Beatles Museum as a family. That was quite nice. Didn't speak to a lot of Liverpudlians at that point. But there. Can I get back onto Doctor Who? That's the only thing I didn't really like.
Your character assassination of Liverpool. It's going to be great for writing.
Well, I expect they'll all be trolling me because that's how I just painted
them. Love Liverpudlians. They're brilliant.
Some of them are nice. The Beatles were quite nice.
I'm going to take the fifth on this, being a Man United fan.
No, I'm just having a dig at the Liverpool people that attacked us. So that didn't paint them to me in a very good light. I've been to lots and lots of away games with following Southampton. The two teams that I had really bad experiences at, and I would expect it at Portsmouth to a certain degree, but Tottenham and Liverpool, they don't make you feel very welcome as away fans.
Adam, just before we move on, yes? What you're saying is that everyone in Liverpool is exactly like that and you hate them all.
Even the ones who work unofficially at museums and...
Can I please... Well, let me speak. Right.
Even the ones who weren't even everybody. There, Kirby.
It's not everybody in Liverpool. No, please let me speak. I'm just... The Liverpool Football Club I was talking about. Not Liverpool the city. I'm just saying Liverpool... Somebody who allegedly supports Liverpool Football Club lobbed a rocket. Not just that. When I took my father-in-law to watch the FA Cup final back in the... Whenever it was, 2000s, when Eric Cantona scored that goal quite close to the end. Took my father-in-law to watch that game and I went back to the car to wait for them, sat in the Beetle.
That was 96.
Why are we talking about football?
I'm explaining why I don't like Liverpool.
Basically, Adam's saying that everyone who lives in Liverpool is scum. That's what I'm hearing.
That's not what I was saying. Everybody, Liverpool Football Club, that's what I'm saying.
They're not my words, by the way.
Speak? Let me tell you the second story. Right. So I went back to the car, waiting for them to my car in the car park at Wembley Stadium, waiting for my wife and my father-in-law to come back from their part of Wembley. And they'd let all my tyres down. This bus load of Liverpool fans let all my tyres down. And this little
Wake
kid...
Wake me up when we talk Doctor Who, please.
Well, finish the bloody story!
I'm not surprised they let your tyres down, Adam, if you're slagging them off on podcasts.
I'm trying to tell you a story. Right. Anyway, so... so they've let all my tyres down, the Beetle. It was difficult getting Beetle tyres back up again, by the way. And this car sort of was on its way out of the car park. And there were some children in the back waving a Manchester United flag. This Liverpool fan jumped off this bus, snatched the flag out of this child's hand and broke it over his knee. He was cheered by his fellow
Liverpool... He broke the child's knee?
Yeah, broke it over the child's knee.
No, over his own knee. And then he promptly was arrested by the London Constabulary with a couple of expletives, which I shall not mention on this show. That's the reason I have a particular dislike to Liverpool Football Club, because they're not very nice, the fans. Not very nice. Anyway, right, so let's go back to Doctor Who.
What you're saying is that every single person who supports Liverpool, who walks the earth, is a piece of scum that you want nothing to do with.
No, I know.
That's what I'm hearing. They're not my words, people.
No, I'm saying why I don't like Liverpool.
Adam Pearson.
I'm going to stick by I don't like Liverpool. Anyway, Liverpool Football Club. Liverpool Football Club. That's why I don't like the fact they've got Anfield in Doctor Who. I think it's they should have St Mary's Stadium, yes. Old Trafford to a degree, but not Anfield. Anyway, right, let's go back to Doctor Who. So I quite enjoyed it, tentatively. I tentatively enjoyed it. I like the dog character that looks like Star. I think it's wonderful they've had a dog character that looked like Magic, and now they've got a dog character that looks like Star. So on the whole, quite excited to a certain degree for a pitiful amount of Doctor Who episodes this year. What did you think of it, Debbie?
Last week's episode... Absolutely, edge of the seat, really. But honestly, it was, who else can we throw at you every corner with with every enemy turning up almost. I was just waiting on the Daleks just to go bingo at the end, but it did feel like Doctor Who.
Daleks play bingo. How do they put the counters on the card, Debbie? You've got to think about these things.
Thing, and they use that instead. They put some ink on that and then go like that.
But that would smudge the whole card, unless their card was massive.
Yeah, but they're Daleks.
I mean, you have to think of the size of the Dalek card.
You're not. Yeah, but the size of the bingo would have to be, you know, have to increase exponentially to deal with Daleks. But...
Bingo! I have a full house.
All the fours, 44. Yeah, no.
I have like four corners.
It felt like villain bingo, but the way they brought them in was really well done. The quick introduction of the characters, I absolutely love the love-hate relationship. I'm not your human!
Yeah, it's good.
You know, all the way through that was just brilliant. The fact that life debt had caused what she thought would be an invasion, it turns out it's just our dogs coming to get us and save us. That was a really nice touch. I really like that. And I just thought the new villains, yes, of course, as you say, pantomimey, but wow, it's time we had a new villain that intrigued us.
Yeah, I do feel they're quite threatening, I must admit.
This is it. It's a new villain. Yeah. We had quite a few new villains, you know, with the 13, obviously, we've had a few new villains. But these guys are interesting. And that's what is a clincher with Doctor Who, and it's what's been missing in Doctor Who. So this whole bringing everything together, this the outer spider web of what is going to be happening with Flux, and just bringing all the characters together, I thought was really well done. I thought the music wasn't invasive this time. It really helped move the story along. And I thought as I said, the introduction of new characters just slotted beautifully in. It didn't feel like an overload, but except for villain bingo. That did feel like how many more people are we going to see? But it was nice to have some new villains instead.
Villain bingo.
Liked it, really liked it. And as for this week, cool.
Villain bingo.
Villain bingo.
Bill and anyway, okay. Mary, what did you think?
Bingo. In other words, bring in the angels.
Oh, I like the angels. Mary, what did you think?
The angels being there, that was great.
It was like how the angels should be. You know, they just whiz people back in time. They don't sort of break their necks. I thought it was a bit when we last saw them, they were a bit of neck breakers and stuff, weren't they? This is more like the angels.
This is the proper original angels. Yeah. That whole sequence, I actually meant to say that whole sequence where she's trying to open the door. Mm. Phenomenal.
Oh, yeah,
really good. Yeah, absolutely.
That was just so good.
Can I just say, at this point, right, because of that scene, every night when I've gone left my studio shed type thing, I'm going in the house and I have to lock it, I have to keep my eyes now on the light the whole time and I don't look at the lock anymore so I can do it if I ever get attacked by
one. Yeah, I think, I have to say that even though Blink's a really great story, they did actually make it more scary with that particular thing. Anyway, thank you, Deb. I'll take you finished, Deb, before I move on to Mary.
Really enjoyed it.
Mary, what did you think?
Well, let me say from this side of the pond that now that characters are allowed to speak in their own dialect and not, we're not all doing, you know, I think they call it perceived English or whatever. And I had no ability to, because this was the simulcast that I watched, and I had no ability to look at any captions to help me figure out. That whole episode pretty much blew by me with me having very little understanding of what was going on. And I found the music somewhat invasive.
That's what I said, but I did say that last week, didn't I, Mary? Didn't I?
You said what?
About the music being too loud.
Yeah, it was. So then when I had the chance, I did watch, because I taped it and I did watch it with captions. And oh my God, it was actually a cohesive story.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it?
But my first impression is we've lost the audience. We've got to get them back. And so we're going to throw everything, including the kitchen sink. We're going to throw old monsters and new monsters. We're going to go at such a breakneck speed that people are going to have to either not know what's going on, which means they're going to have to watch it some more, like I had to. Or they're just going to be so confused. It's like, well, I better keep watching, the next episodes to see what this is all about. So I think that this was kind of a desperate measure to capture the audience again.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mary. Kirby, did you get a chance to see it and understand it?
Yes, I had to download some subtitles.
Oh, bless you guys, honestly. It must be hard.
And I watched it once in the middle of the night. I need to watch it again. I was going to watch it again yesterday with Fred, but she didn't want to see it. She's going to wait until all six episodes drop because she's
it's
just that
way.
It's the
box set generation.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And I enjoyed what I saw.
Good.
I was pleasantly surprised. And I have two questions. Debbie has already sort of answered it. In one word, Adam...
Don't say Liverpool.
How was the second episode?
He wants to know about this episode.
Oh, well, I'm going to say what happened, but I really enjoyed the second episode, probably like equally amount as I did the first. I think you're going to have to definitely still have your subtitles on for the Scottish Sontaran. Well, that's all I'm going to say.
not just the Scottish, but the Liverpool.
I thought it might have been Capaldi in a Sontaran's outfit. I still haven't worked out who it is yet.
He did sound like him, didn't he? Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering if he's come back.
It'd be funny
now, that I have magically gone through time and I have the episode, I will get some subtitles.
Okay, thank you. My
other question.
Oh, go on, sorry.
Is the dog creature.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's brilliant.
Was his accent a Yorkshire accent?
Yes, he's Yorkshire.
No, he's a Yorkshire Terrier.
Oh, hey! That's one of your better ones, Kirby. Well done. Very good. No, it's a Shih Tzu. A very big Shih Tzu called Star. Right, then, before we move on to Ben, Lynn and Robin, I don't know what she's saying. She's saying, finally, you're late. How can we... I was bang on 7:30, so how is that late? Can someone explain that to me?
Because he put the feedback for 7 o'clock.
It's going
to
be a half an hour.
Oh, okay. And then she says the 20... She swore. She said the 20-megabyte Liverpool football podcast. I'll let this that swear word...
can we not talk about football so much as we do?
Yeah, and Adam, we really shouldn't sit there and we don't want to hear your views on derogatory things about Liverpool and how much you hate them.
Thanks, Ben. And Tim Drew... Hang on. Oh, sorry, Tim nearly caught me off guard. Right.
You think he's going to catch you off guard? You've got our Liverpool coming.
Yeah. In their sides.
Yeah. I expect to find my car on bricks tomorrow morning. Tim Drury says,
you're
going to
be the
good
one
story.
In the world who can reunite Liverpool and Everton football clubs.
Yeah, Tim Drury says, good story, beware of falling pianos.
Yeah.
All right. Human nature.
Must be talking about human nature, because that's what we have, falling piano.
That's what we're doing now. Yeah. Right then.
Unless there was a falling piano in today's new episode.
Anyway, back to Doctor. Anyway, so human nature begins with a bit
Hold
of...
Hold on.
What?
I'm sat here.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Ben. I was under the deep impression that you don't watch 13th Doctor episodes. So I just assume. Sorry, Ben, yes.
If you will back the truck up. God, I have to say that.
Beep, beep. This vehicle is reversing. Beep,
I've
beep.
I've been practicing. Can I give you my views? Are you interested? Oh,
yes, go on then.
Absolutely.
Can I go any higher while I'm getting more insulted?
Go on.
Aw, you got so it.
Right, well, I last week came out to my studio to do the podgram with you lot, but I completely forgot New Doctor Who was on, and so I turned up in the shed about 10 minutes into the episode. So I thought, well, I might as well watch it. I'd actually come out to watch the episode we were meant to be we reviewed last week, because it was so long ago that I'd seen it. I thought I might as well catch up, and I sat down to watch, and I thought, okay then, let's give this a go. And here are my thoughts.
No,
I thought the episode itself actually very enjoyable. I was very pleasantly surprised. As Adam said last week, he went in with very low expectations. I went in with even lower expectations.
If that's possible.
No, it is possible by quite a distance. and yeah, I actually really quite enjoyed it. I thought the story was pretty fast-paced, fast-moving. It kept you on the edge of your seat, as that phrase has been used still, I think, by Debbie. And... I thought John Bishop was very good. I used to really like John Bishop as a comedian when he came originally was on the scene about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. I thought he was excellent, but that I've fallen out of love with him a little bit over the last 10 or so years. And so I was interested to see what he was going to do, because obviously, was it Bradley Walsh who was in it
yes.
before?
Yes.
Yeah, because I obviously haven't seen any of that, so I don't know what he was like. But I quite like Bradley
Walsh. He's good at Pop Rocket, actually.
He's what?
So
he's playing a Pop Larkin.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I haven't seen any of that yet. But I thought John Bishop was good, yeah. I really, and, you know, this is going to be so obvious, but I really just did not get on with Jodie Whittaker as Doctor at all. I just, it just doesn't sit right. It's like Pep Guardiola being the manager of Man United.
Another football reference, that's what we're after.
Okay. I just can't.
Is it because it's a woman instead of a man, or is it just her in particular?
I think it's a bit of both. I've always been very vocal on the fact that I don't think Doctor Who, the character of the Doctor, should be portrayed by a female actress. Yeah. There's a lot of it in that. And, you know, if you go in thinking, I'm not going to like this, you're probably not going to like it.
Yeah.
I sat there open-minded with the episode, and I say I enjoyed watching it, but I just don't like Jodie. I also don't like the companion. I don't know her name.
Yaz.
Thank you. I've got no idea. You could have said anything then.
But and she's not popular.
With you.
She's not popular.
Frankly. No, so I'm not a fan of her either. But I'm actually looking forward to sitting down and watching the second episode, which I can do tomorrow because there's no football on this week because it's blooming international week again. Jeez. So there's nothing on, so I can watch it tomorrow night. And I'm looking forward to watching it, actually, even though, as I say, there are one or two people in it who are just,
I will say, though, the two episodes I've seen in this series, the acting is right up there.
Mandip Gill.
Mandip Gill. I know the character is annoying, but Mandip really does push her heart and soul into the part that she's been told to play. The acting is off the scale in Doctor Who at the moment.
It's been brilliant.
But those were my thoughts.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks for not forgetting about me, Adam.
I didn't expect you to watch it. That's the only reason I didn't.
I told you last week I watched. Thanks for listening.
Sorry. God. Ian Kirk says, David Tennant had his ID stolen. He's now just Dav Tennant.
Dad jokes, always the best.
Lillian enjoyed that joke. Right then, so because Deb's got to leave at 9, Kirby's going to allow us to bash through these two episodes of Doctor Who from the David Tennant era. We're back on the journey. Right then, so the episode starts with a bit.
I absolutely want to stay, but
yes, you know, but we're going to help you out as best we can, Deb. So,
Deb, you realise if you didn't interrupt before we'd actually started, we'd have got through further
I'd
already.
Do it instead of Kirby.
Yeah.
Then you get fed up of interrupting, and then
the Doctor and Martha are sort of involved in some sort of battle. They're flying into the TARDIS. They've sort of been in a bit of trouble with some aliens, and they have to get away. And the Doctor thinks the only way, because he's a Time Lord, and he's the only one, and they really need a Time Lord because they've got a very short life.
So they need
the life of a Time Lord. So then
he's not the only Time Lord.
He thinks he's the only Time Lord.
He's not that arrogant.
Master?
What?
No, I have a question. How did these creatures live if they're like mayflies and only live for 3 months?
Quickly.
Right. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show.
Oh, is it now?
Right. Anyway, so the Doctor decides he must use this thing called the Chameleon Arch.
Are we setting stuff up for later in the series?
To change his DNA to human and his mind, and the TARDIS creates this scenario so he can hide away, and he's actually hidden away as a school teacher in a very posh school. And poor old Martha, who's been there to basically be his guardian, has given them a wonderful job of being a maid in a time in which she would have been, you know, had the difficult job of, you know, being a maid and being a ethnic person, getting a certain amount of abuse double the amount of abuse a maid would have got in those situations.
A female maid.
A female maid.
Yeah. But nevertheless, David Tennant switches into this role superbly. It's got this cool teacher.
Oh, he's great in this.
Yeah, he is.
And again, let's say Freeman's great as well. And it's so she really is looking after him straight away. And there's this watch, which obviously that he's very interested in. He's having these dreams about adventures and stuff like that, which is obviously the Doctor's memories coming through, which again is quite charming. And well done, Kirby. I've actually got past the title sequences.
I have interrupted you more times than Kirby.
Yeah, me too.
And if you include that one, it's 3-1.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a public school.
And that one is now 4-1. I'm winning.
And there's a scene, of course, Martha's got her little friend while she's scrubbing the floor. Jenny, isn't it? The curly haired lady.
Since Robert couldn't join us, I will interrupt with something that he would remind you of, and that is that when the students are marching at the very beginning, just after the title sequence, one of the ones in the very back cannot march. He is completely out of step with everyone, and he's got his arms going wrong.
Okay. I would.
So if that wasn't actually an interruption from you, does that mean we have to take it to VAR?
But he made sure that you guys knew that 9 years ago. So I'm just making sure that you guys know it now.
Yeah, all right, whatever. Anyway, what's his name's friend? The Nipper who's gets saved by the other Nipper later on in the episode. I can't remember his name now.
But
Latimer,
what?
Is it? He comes and sort of hears a bit of abuse. What?
Okay, you're talking about the students, yes.
he hurls a little bit of abuse, aided and abetted by Baines, while he's still Baines, at the two maids, specifically Martha. Now, I did get vibes from Mordred Undead the Nipper reminded me of Turlough's friend a little bit in that episode.
Yes.
Martha?
Slightly more, what's the word for it, arrogant. Yes, Ben.
Can I just say, I completely forgot to say, the dogs in the episode of Doctor Who from last week made me think I was watching Spaceballs.
Yes. Yeah, well done. Nice one.
Sorry.
So I just got distracted by the Strictly result. Right then, so moving on. And because now we move the next scene after these sort of slight abuse of Martha scenes is... John Smith getting all flirty with the matron. Oh, matron!
Oh, matron!
there's a bit of you know, something going on there.
Who is master?
Yes, he is the master. Yes, we're not the master, a master at the school.
Who has watched the TV series Spaced?
Ben has.
Not me.
Well, she's one of the main people in it.
She's been in lots of stuff.
Simon Pegg show.
Yeah, Simon Pegg and what's his name? The other geezer he works with a lot.
Frost?
Who's obviously... Yes, Frost. Yeah. Nick Frost.
Nick Frost, that's it. Anyway, very soon, Martha starts getting a little bit jealous of the attentions that the matron and Master Smith... having, and
that was like someone doing an impression of someone doing an impression of someone doing an impression.
This is just after during his flirting he falls backwards down the stairs and gets a bit of an examination. And the scene, obviously, the matron's sort of giving him the once over with a stethoscope, and Martha comes running into the room. And I love the scene where she said, "Martha, it's not your place," and she walks back out again and comes in again. yes. So really well done. And then this is a point in which Smith starts telling of his dreams and the fact he's written them down in this journal of impossible things, which you used to be able to buy. Finish my sentence. You used to be able to buy at whowon.co.uk. I don't know if you can, but we'll have to look it up at the later on.
Online. The
you've got it, have you?
Mm.
Okay. Kirby.
Great save, by the way, Adam. Great save. It was a shot from Kirby. Here it comes again. It's a rebound.
May I say something?
You may.
5-3, Kirby.
The introduction of the Journal of Impossible Things officially made the Eighth Doctor canon.
Yes. Thank you for that, Kirby. But it's a really cool book, and it does exist. You can buy it and get bored to tears by all the stuff that's in it.
Yeah, I don't
it,
have it.
Okay, never mind.
Although I did order the novel Human Nature yesterday. I should have it in a couple of days.
Splendid. Anyway, so the boys are to plan to get some beer, and Baines sort of, after having a bit of a bullying session with the young nipper, whose name, who nicked Tim. The watch. What was his name?
Tim.
Tim, that's it. He nicked the watch. But they a bit
they,
of a,
they, Tim, they nice call me Tim.
There's some who call me Tim.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're bullying him anyway, but Baines decides to go out and get some beer.
Which he never comes back with.
No, he doesn't. He just comes back with a bit of an attitude, really, doesn't he?
And a bit of a sinus infection.
Anyway, meanwhile, there's a scene in which Martha and Jenny are having a cup of tea outside in the freezing cold.
Jenny, who's not the doctor's daughter.
How do you know it isn't? She might have regenerated. Anyway, a spaceship...
and he hits the post from the halfway line.
I think it's
well,
something...
Well, you know, if she had been the Doctor's daughter, then they wouldn't need another Time Lord.
So anyway, there's some green lights flashing around because it looks like they're doing a bit of searching for someone. Baines, meanwhile, is out on the field and
so,
walks...
Question.
Oh.
Would the servants actually be required to drink outside of the pub?
Oh, yeah, women in general.
Yeah, women weren't allowed in buildings like that.
Yeah. And we're not allowed in, yeah.
Quite rightly so.
It's only joking, only joking. That rule.
So it's not just because they're servants, it's because they're women.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Back in the day, Kirby, women were not treated the same way as they are now.
Basically, I think there was Kirby, until the advent of the internet, things were fine.
Yeah, I think there was something going in the early part of the 20th century called the suffragette movement, and that was to do with the women getting the vote. Do I need to tell this story? Women getting the vote?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, carry on then.
Was her name, Emily Pankhurst? Did you notice? Did he throw herself under the king's horse?
Speaking of suffragettes, did I... show you guys one of the pictures of the costume contest at Phantom of the Opera last week. Mm-hmm. Was someone dressed as a suffragette.
Thank you for that. I can't remember.
Well done, Sister Suffragette.
Hmm.
It was because the movie came out in 1925.
Okay, thank you. Neil James says, hi, you good-looking people. There's no need to be sarcastic, Neil.
Why do you
do? I watched Warriors of the Deep this morning. Full disclosure, I was still drunk, and guess what? It helped. But this two-parter is wonderful, as is Debbie's Facebook posts. I'll be a bum. Thanks for the laughter. Where? Where's his laughter? Oh, Ben's on the show.
Of silly stuff.
Brandon Moore says, sorry I'm late, just got back from Gallifrey, which is in Ireland, don't you know? All right, then. Anyway, so Baines, meanwhile...
Gallifrey is a convention in L.A.
Thank you,
I've been to Gallifrey in Ireland.
Have you?
I flew out of there, I think. No, I got a bus out of there.
Thank you, Debbie. Anyway, so Baines is attracted to this green light and basically gets sort of... after touching this really sort of invisible dome thing that's protecting the ship, he eventually gets taken inside.
I'm surprised that the rain wasn't running down the sides of the spaceship because it was raining in every single nighttime outside scene.
You're surprised, are you? So it's not good enough for you, the special effects that they managed to put together.
Of an invisible spaceship?
Well, the touching of a dome of an invisible spaceship.
I thought that was well done.
Hang on, you moaned about the fact that the rain wasn't bouncing off this issue.
I was making more of a comment about the fact that it was raining constantly.
No, but I saw it as a dig at the special effects department not rendering the rain on the... So Baines is...
Kirby, it was filmed in the UK, Kirby. So therefore, the chances of rain outside pretty high.
Yeah, really high.
Yeah, somebody must have either washed their car as well. Or
one
mentioned
thing
that the barbecue.
Always amazed me about Doctor Who is when they do these outdoor scenes and it's raining, they just carry on.
Have you never been to England?
No.
No.
It rains all the time, Kirby. Literally. Oh, if you put your head out and it's not raining, you have to go and do whatever you need to do really quickly.
Yes, we've still been waiting for the summer to turn up, and now it's autumn.
I'm still waiting for summer 2015 to turn up, mate.
Anyway, so Bane, I'll tell you what.
It's 5 now.
Right now, is it raining right now?
I don't know. I'm not going to bother looking.
Probably.
It's nothing. Doesn't excite me if it's raining because it's just.
It's
regular.
Quite a high chance. It actually rained on time yesterday. It said on my phone app, midnight, 40% chance of rain. I was stood outside at midnight just having a. And it started raining.
If the weather forecast says more than 2% of rain, it's going to rain.
Yes, probably. The odds are that it's going to be accurate. Yes.
The odds are very high.
Anyway, moving away from the 20 megabyte weather show.
According to the weather map that I'm currently, the live radar over the entire England, Ireland, oh no, at the very tip of Scotland, in a place called, Peterhead. I know Peterhead and Fraserburgh. It's raining there, nowhere else in the UK.
Moving away from the 20 megabyte weather podcast. Bane's return. I'll tell you what.
By whoone.co.uk. Yeah.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
The actor that plays Bane's.
He was.
Is absolutely outstanding in this episode. Yes. His facial expression, his sort of possessed expression, is much, much better. And I dread to say this, than Elizabeth Sladen's possessed expression. He is absolutely a man. Now they do it slightly with camera angles. They sort of do go really close into him to make his nostrils look really flary. But he is superb in this episode. This story, in fact.
How dare you slag off Liz Sladen?
I didn't slag her off. I'm just saying this actor's possessed.
You said that her possessed look was rubbish.
No, I said her possessed acting is excellent. But this bloke.
You said her entire career is a sham and you hate everyone.
Here we go.
Now
I know where your attempts at getting me into trouble with Liverpool people are coming from. Anyway, so Martha, meanwhile, finds the TARDIS in a shed and goes inside. She's got a key now and just has a little remembering what happened, so we get to see.
Is there a TARDIS in Ben's shed?
Yeah.
Let me have a look.
So I can get on with the episode.
That's a Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, so we get to see exactly what happened, and there's a little video of instructions that the Doctor gives Martha for when he is human, but he didn't mention about, you know, him being in love or stuff like that, or the watch disappearing, which is just about to do. Yes.
That entire video is an extra somewhere on the DVDs, although I've lost it. I know it's on the DVDs, but I'm not quite sure where.
Thank you for that, Kirby. That 30 seconds is not possible to get back from Deb's departure time. So anyway, Tim, he's now got the watch, and he's starting to...
I could start doing 42 type... countdowns for Deb.
No, I'm fine. I can keep an eye on the time.
Yeah, that wouldn't take up any time at all, would it, Kirby? No.
Do countdowns every 10 seconds just so you're not late?
Yeah, exactly.
How about random countdown times like they had in 42?
Tim peers into the watch, ignoring nonsense, and gets a bit of Artron energy and starts getting memories and things, scenes that the Doctor's seen in the past. And every time that watch is opened, the sort of aliens, specifically Bane's, gets a nostril full of Time Lord smell. And then these scarecrows appear in the field, which are apparently made by Bane's, and start
190
attacking
seconds.
People and turning them into the family of whatever. And, so...
1 second.
So now they know that they're sort of... They're close to finding the Doctor because of Tim being a bit of a thief and nicking the watch and opening up a couple of times. There's a bit of shooting practice, and there's a flash forward. Tim sees this flash forward in time to the war when they're about to die from a shell hitting them. But he knows he's with Latimer, so he knows that there's a point in which they survive the war, so... and there's a very interesting scene between Smith and Bane's, where Bane is really sort of interested in Smith and is very, very suspicious. What? There's something
Master?
More to him than meets the eye. Yes.
Have you noted the scene that was someone on the feed said about the fallen piano?
Well, the fact is, Kirby, I haven't actually got to that bit yet.
Oh, okay.
So, I suppose like the answer would have to be no, wouldn't it? So anyway, the doctor, Dad Smith is out and about having a bit of fresh air with his bird, and then he does a very much a thing we saw in the first Matt Smith story, which I forget what's called. 11th hour, isn't it?
11th hour.
When he has this sort of extra sense and sees things that other people don't, and he sees this woman pushing a pram, and it's just about to sort of be killed by this piano because he sees the rope fraying, and he throws a cricket ball, which is obviously a reference to the Fifth Doctor, beautifully accurately, and
yes, and I'm agreeing with you.
And sets off a sort of chain reaction, which leads to the saving of the lady with the baby. Now, what sort of got to my mind in this particular scene was that baby, and they're talking about changing the past and stuff in Doctor Who, they do it all the time. Maybe she was supposed to die, like Rose's father, fixed point in time, stuff like that, I don't know.
You missed the other very important part of that scene.
I did.
Yes, and it was my other quote. I was waffling between the quotes. My father Sydney was a watchmaker from Nottingham.
Yeah, all right. Yes,
my mother Verity was a nurse.
Okay,
actually,
yes, I missed that because I'm trying to get through it. But yes, okay, yes, that was a very
it's
nice.
It's so important.
It's not important. It's just a casual reference to Verity Lambert and Sydney Newman. But it's very nice, nevertheless.
Aimed at us.
Yes, dear, that's right. Anyway, they go up and field and on a field and sort of poke around the scarecrows. And then they go back and have a look at the this book, and Smith snuggles up to the matron, and there's a nice drawing of her in one of the pages of the book, and they have a bit of a smooch. Yeah. Much to Martha's disgust.
Smoochy boochy. Yeah. Oh, wrong one.
So Martha goes back to the TARDIS and rewatches the videos again, and. Yeah, Tim sits around looking at the watch, and then he sees the three members of the family of blood getting together for a little confab. And I love the little girl with a red balloon. It's very Pennywise, isn't it? I don't know if it was a
yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Master. According to the commentary, the balloon is actually part of the creature.
That's correct. A bit like the 11th hour when the dog was part of the creature.
Yes.
In that thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I get a ding for that one. Thank you very much.
Well done, Adam. My goodness.
Thank you. I wonder if those creatures are related. So anyway, right, moving on. The next scene is Jenny getting killed by the scarecrow people. Captured by the scarecrow people and then killed by and turned into Mother of Mine by the family of blood. And then she turns up, and Martha very quickly realises she's not quite herself, and babbles a few questions at her, which is very, very clever. And knows...
Because Martha is a very good companion.
She is. Then she knows immediately that they are in danger and seeks out the doctor. Sorry, yeah, the doctor. She is seeking out the doctor and trying to say, not right. Now's the time to, to... come out of your shell so much, but she goes to get the watch, which of course is missing because that tea leaf Tim has it. And so they go off to this sort of dance, and the family of blood know that what they're looking for is in this sort of hall. Yes.
Did you notice what date it was on the little dance announcement?
No.
It's exactly 5 years before Armistice Day.
Thank you, Kirby.
November 11th.
Thank you, Kirby. Anyway, so as they're all having a lovely little dance, the family of blood turn up and shoot a few couple of people. No, so I'm going through this quite quickly. And
yes,
grab Martha. And change back and stuff like that. Otherwise, we'll kill your best friend. So you've got a choice, your friend or your lover.
We have 13 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's...
I'm on till nine.
Nine? No, Debbie! Say it's 8:30. Say it's 8:30. Yeah, you've got 13 minutes.
And let's be fair. Come on, Adam. You didn't do that right at all. You didn't say change back.
What did he say then?
Change back.
That's it. Thank you. Yes.
Change back.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, so that's exactly what they said, and that was a very good cliffhanger.
Funny monster, really, isn't he?
That was a very good cliffhanger, and certainly more light alike a Doctor Who cliffhanger should be. But as
Do you
we
know
resume,
why it's called a cliffhanger,
eh?
You know why it's called a cliffhanger?
I sort of do, but I can't remember. You're just about to tell me, nevertheless.
I'll tell you very quickly.
Yeah, go on.
It's because in the very first episode of the TV soap Dallas, Cliff Barnes was left swinging on a rope on a banister, and that's how the term cliffhanger was born.
Very good.
No.
That's an absolute lie.
I don't buy that one, yeah.
No, what about, never buy
come
it.
On.
What about in Dragonfire when the Doctor was hanging from a cliff by his umbrella?
Ella.
No, the fourth Doctor was hanging off of a cliff in one of the Key to Time ones.
Yeah, well, there you go. Anyway, so Martha gets them out of this particular predicament, and as we resume in with the Family of Blood, after Tim intervenes by opening up the watch a little bit and distracting them. But unfortunately, they also know even more so that Smith is likely to be the Doctor. But that the distraction allows them to get the people within the hall out. And Martha sort of created a bit of a stalemate with where she's pointing the gun at Baines, but she's still in a bit of trouble. And they sort of move
still
in on her.
Bit Reservoir Dogs, wasn't it?
Yeah. They move in on her, and she gets grabbed by a scarecrow from behind. And then she managed to get out. I'm trying to work out how she got out. Sorry, I've watched that scene there.
Oh, she just
wriggled. She wriggled free and runs out of the building and said, right, let's get out of here. Because I think...
No, you don't get sharper.
No. So anyway, so run back to the school, and Smith rounds everyone up for a bit of a battle with the sort of guns and stuff like that.
Roses.
Yeah. the headmaster...
Axel and Slash and Duffel walking around the corner.
Yeah, the headmaster doesn't take too kindly to... All right, thank you.
Oh, no! We've killed some of the main rocking bands from the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, so the headmaster doesn't take too kindly to getting bossed around by Martha. And then there's a great scene between Baines and the headmaster. Really, but the acting, wow, amazing, yeah. But the headmaster sort of tries to invite Baines back in because he doesn't quite believe. He thinks he's being a naughty boy. But he doesn't last much longer because he gets evaporated eventually after another member of staff gets
evaporated.
And then there's a big march in with the scarecrows, which get mowed down by in a hail of bullets. The poor boys, which I thought was quite a good scene. They're all scared stiff, the ones with the guns. You know, I thought that was really well depicted.
I thought it was brilliant, that bit.
Really good.
And then there's a conversation between Martha and the matron, which Martha does explain thoroughly who Smith actually is, and the fact that she really is a doctor herself by talking about the boons in the hand. And they find the TARDIS, the Family of Blood.
It's horrible that she has to prove herself, like, so much.
Yeah, she does, but she does her job.
The thing is that I learned the bones of the hand in biology class in high school.
Congratulations, yes, Kirby. That's very good. But
shall we call you Dr. Kirby from now on? From henceforth?
But the thing is, though, this is why Martha's such a good companion. She's been told that she has to look after the Doctor, and she basically does everything she can with every fibre of her being to do what she's set out to do, and she does a great job of it, and depicted brilliantly by Freema Agyeman. Right then, anyway, so they find the TARDIS. The only thing had in this scene where they're
going to do it anyway.
They're circling the TARDIS. They're guarding it. The chap with the tash looks like he's the Incredible Hulk because they've shown a green light in his face, which is very unfortunate.
Master. If the Doctor could rip off one of the Scarecrow's arms, how did the Scarecrows move the TARDIS?
Science fiction fantasy TV show. How did the Scarecrows move at all then, Kirby?
It's a science fiction fantasy TV program.
So anyway,
it's one rule for one rule for the other around here, isn't
correct.
It?
Yeah. And then we have the scene where Smith and Matron have the matron's trying to say, well, you're this person. He says, no, I like being me. I like being in love with you. I don't want to be the doctor. I am John Smith. And she sort of asks him about his life.
It just does fantastically. Yeah. Those scenes.
She asks him about his life, and he talks about his life as if it's an encyclopedia, which is really, really good and clever writing. Sorry. Tim then tells Latimer about what's going to happen to them.
Are you crying?
Pardon?
Were you crying? It sounded like you had a little blub and a little lump in your throat.
I feel as if I should be, but no, I'm all right at the moment. Thank you very much. Anyway.
No, that's screaming.
Tim keeps opening up the blimmin' watch and attracting the attention of the family of Blum.
Surely that lets the doctor's life out every time he opens it up.
Yeah.
So when he comes back, he should have little gaps in his memory, what he was doing Thursday week.
The little Pennywise girl then sort of comes after Tim, and he sort of opens the watch up again to sort of power this sort of Artron energy at her. And the battle commences, and there's a bit of shooting. The scarecrows are all sort of now, what do you call it? Straw. That's what I was going to think. A pile of straw. The only thing I had, I wasn't overly convinced with the acting of the little girl. Just saying. That's the only thing I had.
Yeah, horse feed. Yeah.
Horse feed. Yeah. And then all hell breaks loose. There's lots of chasing and running and hiding, and Smith is pressured more and more into, because they haven't got the watch yet, into finding the watch and changing back into the doctor. they go and hide at the course. The family of Blood have gone back to their spaceship. They're thinking, we got him now. So they go and hide in this little house, and Martha says, come on, find this watch. And unfortunately, at that point, Tim rocks up at the front door with the watch. Yeah, I can have this. But even then, it takes a bit of persuading. But the only way out of the situation... Now, this is what gets me. The only way out of the situation is the doctor coming back, which makes it seem that why did he... You know, he could have dealt with the situation better in the first place, anyway, because this is more, for me, this is a more sort of dire situation it was when he changed into John Smith. But there you go. The next scene is one of my favourite scenes after the very emotional scene in which he's sort of fighting with he's going to kill John Smith, basically. And Smith is obviously very, very scared about whether he's brave enough to actually do it, to actually kill himself and become the doctor again.
Do you want a minute, Adam, or are you all right to carry on?
So the next scene is a superb scene in which the doctor holds the hand of Matron, and it shows her a life that could have been. Now, what got me about this scene, it was beautifully done. This is sort of very fleeting sort of life flashing before your eyes, or life that could have been flashing before your eyes. And then Rupert Everett is lying in bed, apparently dying.
Master, mm-hmm. you're referring to Tennant's old age makeup, which is very, very well done.
It does look just like Rupert Everett, yes. And then that fantastic scene.
Watch on the DVD, if you watch the extra of David Tennant's video diary,
yeah.
They have a whole section where he's getting made up like that. And when he's done, he says he looks just like his father.
Oh, thank you, Kirby. Anyway, so then my favourite scene of when Smith
son
arrives.
Son looks like father, shocker, eh?
Well, he said he didn't until they put the wig on.
Anyway, so, oh God.
Like father's shock.
My favourite scene in which Smith appears in the spaceship and accidentally knocks into a few settings. And I suppose they didn't notice that. We're obviously a bunch of thickos. And of course, the watch is empty because he's already absorbed his own, you know, personality. And he tells everyone to run for their lives as the spaceship blows up. And then we get the only sort of scene I think didn't feel very doctorish to me, as we hear Bane sort of telling the story of how we punished everybody in a very cruel and horrible way. But very poetic as well. Very theatrical and poetic.
Like that burp, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that perhaps he could have done what he more or less did what he did with the Slytherin, didn't he? I just felt it was a bit sort of over the top what he did to them. And the girl hiding in the mirror thing, I didn't think that was... I know it's a science fiction fantasy TV show, but it's that removed the science fiction part of it. It's just a fantasy thing. But there you go. It is what it is.
Every time you see something over your shoulder in a mirror, you think of this episode. And you think,
My girls were, right after they first saw this story, my girls were afraid of mirrors for like 3 or 4 days.
Okay. I accept it. That's the only thing. I'm just saying I didn't okay, fair enough. In a way, you felt as if they deserved
more
it.
Or less than the whole of Merseyside.
But
that was my...
The doctor was judge, jury and executioner in that particular situation. And then, like you're talking about the rain, they went to say their goodbyes and the doctor gives Martha a big cuddle. And then Tim turns up to... and given the watch as a prezzy. And then what I thought was great, obviously, we see the scene in which he saves Latimer's life because he knows the bomb's coming. Sorry, the shell's coming. And then we cut forward to a remembrance service. Now, this episode didn't go out during this particular part of the year. So the fact that this scene was now during a period in which we're all wearing poppies, I indeed am wearing one now, was quite nice, given a lovely touch to watch at this time of year, to be fair. And
I haven't seen anyone yet to get a poppy from, but I'm sure I will in the next few days.
Thank you,
Kirby. I don't think anyone's going to call you out on it, Kirby. Don't worry. No.
Right then, so this story, I mean, I'll do it quickly because Debbie's only got another... you've got to go now, apparently, Deb.
apparently I was going at 8:30, but I always said 9:00, so I'm not entirely sure what's going on.
Kirby told everybody we're starting at 7:00 and it was 7:30, so that's fair enough.
Well, it's my job to be completely wrong with the time.
Oh, is it? Okay. Right, okay. Now, this I have pointed out a couple of minor things already about it, and it is minor because this story is absolutely magnificent. Even the fact that I said the little girl's acting wasn't that good, but it's only because she was being outperformed. She was a little girl and she'd been outperformed by lots of amazing actors. I thought, you know, if it wasn't for the other everybody sort of performing above and beyond their game, that her particular performance wouldn't have stood out that much. It's just scrumptious, beautiful, wonderful story, totally absorbing as well. And it's one of the best two-parters that we've ever had
ever
in Doctor Who, as far as obviously being a four-parter equivalent to. Because two-parters sometimes are a bit difficult. They're a bit sort of, they drag. This doesn't drag at all. It's just wonderful.
Not at all.
And it's nice to have a wonderful story. We haven't had one yet properly in Series 3 of Tennant's era. But we have now. What did you think of it, Ben?
I really like it. It was probably my favourite episodes of the series. Better than the finale? Yeah, I think it probably is. I prefer the lead-up to the finale than the actual finale.
Yeah.
As the two-parter, yeah, absolutely outstanding. Acting was fantastic. Story was brilliant. David Tennant was, just... showed why he's most people's favourite doctor called David Tennant. And, there was nothing really bad about it. The bit we've mentioned in the courtyard with the kids, with the guns, having to fight. It was so well written. You can just imagine yourself, if you're a fella, being a little kid in a school in the early 1900s, 1913s, with the war coming up and having to think about going to fight in this war when you get to that. And that is just scary. And it was portrayed so well, written so well, acted brilliantly. And I still can't look in mirrors.
Thank you. Kirby, what did you think?
Absolutely wonderful. This is pretty much my favorite of this series. I almost said season.
Thank you. well corrected, Kirby.
This pair was nominated for a Hugo Award that year, as well as Blink. Blink won the Hugo Award, but believe it or not, I believe this one holds up better than Blink.
Okay. Oh, is that it?
Yep.
Has he finished?
There's nothing bad about it, is there? There's nothing very, very
bad. It's wonderful.
This is what I was going to say is that it's such a shame that we can't talk more about episodes that we think are glorious than we do about the ones that we don't like. We always seem to do longer reviews.
In a way, that's quite good because, you know, there's nothing more you can add. Is it?
I know. But we're not there yet.
Because it's your turn, Debbie, so you may continue.
But it just seems such a shame that we talk about our more disappointing experiences with episodes and then we have something this amazing. This two-parter is probably up there as part of in the top five now for me. Having rewatched it again, this story is definitely very, very high up there, my top five now. And I just think the acting's superb, the scenery, just the use of the countryside, the use of the building in the way that it can be quite claustrophobic at times, as obviously it's trying, you're kind of reflecting how the Doctor's life has become just this small place now rather than the huge expanse of time and space. And I love how that reflects it. And the music is
good. Brilliant. Point, Debbie. I like that.
Yeah, it feels like that because as soon as he becomes the Doctor again, suddenly we're more outside. We're back outside. The service is outside. Everything is big again. But for the whole of the story, it's small dark rooms or, you know, the dark halls. Obviously, it's all the oak and everything, you know, the polish and school situation. But it does
Well said.
I absolutely love that. I think Freema is outstanding in this. She holds the whole thing together, which is what she's doing anyway. It's her role in this, is to hold things together and to try and keep the Doctor safe. And I prefer this two-parter to the penultimate story, you know, the her walking the Earth, because this is much more personal and just... It's her defending her friend. Yeah. Yes, there could be, you know, the world is going to change as well. We know the world is going to change. And that hanging over this story is beautifully done. I absolutely love this. This really did just make me hope for Doctor Who's to come. We weren't disappointed for quite some time because we got Donna coming. You know, this is, this was golden era and this was absolute pinnacle of it.
Yeah, I think we'll never. Well, is it going to be? Brace yourself. It's Mary. I just knocked the microphone. Do apologise, listeners. You'll run out of breath in a minute.
Mary.
And then unfortunately I'm going to say that I absolutely love this one.
Yeah. Of course. Like
the others, you know, it's probably in my top five, maybe even top three.
Yeah.
Favorite stories. And I loved the way Debbie pointed out, you know, the claustrophobic space when he's human and the large expanse when he's the Doctor. That is so fitting. So rather than pick it apart, I've got a little background that hopefully will make you appreciate the story even more. Of course, you know that this is based on a book that Paul Cornell wrote that is one of the best of the New Adventure books. And when he was brought on to make an adaptation of the book for this, because Russell T. Davies loved the book and he wanted it to be as close to the book as possible. But the Doctor in the book is the Seventh Doctor. And his companion in the book is this whip smart archaeologist by the name of Bernice Summerfield.
Ah. Yay.
So in order to get a feel, because he at the time that Paul Cornell was doing his adaptation, they didn't know who the Doctor's companion was going to be. So he wrote a kind of a generic companion into this. But then he was dedicated enough to make this good that he went to the read through. I don't remember what story he went to the read through of, because he wanted to get to know who is this Martha and what is she like, so that he could write this, you know, specifically for that character. And I think we've seen stories where, you know, like generic companion has been what's written, you know, so they don't get to stand out. But she had the benefit of having him try to find out about her character so that he could write for her.
And he did an excellent job because, and this is what I really, really love about this episode, is that he wrote for a black woman in 1913. You know how we have all these stories where, you know, Martha or even Bill, you know, show up in historicals and it's like nobody notices. But yeah. In one, he wrote for her to be, you know, the oppressed, A, because she was a woman, and B, because she's black. And so he did give his characters lines that that were real to the time, you know, as to what is this black maid doing here and all. So that just makes me worship Cornell. And he was on set a lot because this story has the distinction of having the most rewrites of any story in Doctor Who, because they had to keep changing and rearranging and all that to capture the mood of the story. But Paul wanted to be the one to do the rewrites and all. So, I'm really, really impressed with all of that. And something else, you know, we're marveling over what a great job Tennant did in this story. He was deathly ill through most of this.
Oh, wow.
He was like throwing up in the dressing room. And whereas he normally is like the jokester and having a good time and usually lifts the mood of any set, because he was shut away so much to conserve his strength and only came out for the particular scenes that he had to do, I guess the mood of the whole thing was rather dour. And he didn't even attend the read-through for 42 because he was still too sick for it. So the director had to sit in for Tennant because that was going on at the same time. So when you know that there's all this going on, it just makes it all the more wonderful in my eyes.
Yes.
Thank you, I've just put the book on my wish list because I couldn't remember who'd written it, even though I could probably just
It would be Paul Cornell. Debbie.
Yeah, I know. I've that's what I meant. I was trying to remember ages ago, and I could have just wikied it.
It'll be Paul Cornell, Debbie.
Yeah. I know.
I'm just doing a Kirby. Paul Cornell. Yeah, I'm just doing a Kirby for you.
For those cat is very involved.
Well, like I said, I just ordered the book a few days ago. So
right, Kirby. Now you can proceed with your feedbacks. I thought you'd finished, Mary. I do apologize.
No, he hasn't.
Carry on.
For those who don't know that much about Big Finish, in their early years, they didn't have permission to use any doctors yet in their audio plays. The one character that they were allowed to use was Bernice Summerfield.
Yes.
She's got a whole catalog of stories.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Good.
And I love the way she's written, and I love the way she's played. So just for those who don't know much about Big Finish, there are Bernice Summerfield stories.
Yeah, thank you.
I've actually heard several of them.
Oh,
that's
good.
Why I went yay when you mentioned.
Go on then, Kirby. Launch what? Your feedback request section.
There's not a whole lot.
Oh, I got some.
Have you?
I shared his post. I think I got a sentence from someone.
Okay. Okay.
Well, then. Neil James. Well, first of all, Andy was complaining yesterday because I was apparently late in posting the request for feedback.
Yeah, you got in trouble. He opened a Pandora's box.
Yeah, I was not late.
Oh, God, here we go.
But it's because of the time difference. What was that?
She's getting a point by the sounds of it.
Neil James.
Pointing someone.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Andy posts a picture of a dancing bear saying, oh, yeah, once I posted the request. Neil James, Human Nature of the Family of Blood. Simply put, I believe this is the best Doctor Who story since the series returned in 2005. It has everything and it all works perfectly. The music is stunning. The direction is exciting. The script is terrific, and the combination of heart and horror, or is that horror, is like nothing else in the series before or since. David Tennant's performance is sad and real and beautiful, and Freema Agyeman's is magnificent throughout. Easily the best Martha story. I agree. Mm-hmm. There isn't a weak link in the guest cast with the actors all at the very top of their game. Jessica Hines' Joan is particularly delightful, but as Harry Lloyd, as Jeremy Baines, who manages soar the highest. There's something wrong with that sentence.
I'd love to see him as Doctor Who.
Yes. No. Who's Doctor Who?
Ooh, Debbie.
Debbie? Baines, Baines, son of mine, is a fantastic creation, and he delivers every line with a genius combination of wit and nastiness. I just love him. Just shut up. Stop talking. Cease and desist. There's a good girl.
He was magnificent.
The scene in which Baines faces off against the headmaster is my favorite in the story. The menace in the dialogue is so well written, and it doesn't even feature the Doctor or Martha. Superb. Period setting in the boys' school is great, and the dark cloud of the First World War on the horizon adds an uneasy feeling. The Scarecrows bring a classic element of horror, and the love story is gorgeously realized.
Crimson horror.
Yeah, crimson horror.
Yes. And the love story is gorgeously realized and tragically performed. Even the cliffhanger is awesome.
Yeah.
This isn't only the best Doctor Who story of the last 30 years. It's actually just a stunning piece of television, full stop. And if I could hug it, I would. Five stars out of five.
That's brilliant. I like that.
And he also posts the shut up scene from YouTube. Brandon Moore, it's wonderful and quite an eye for the pretty girls. Human Nature and the Family of Blood by Paul Cornell. I love it all. Everything about this is completely, completely flawless. Okay. Brandon still has his spelling issues.
No, he wouldn't be Brandon
David
without
Tennant is much better as John Smith not talking through his teeth all the bloody time. Martha is at her best here, fending well for herself without the Doctor to steer things. Love the Family of Blood, especially son of mine and daughter of mine. The Scarecrows are creepy. Tom Brody Sangster is great as Tim. And Jessica Hines is amazing. Beautiful examination of the power of the Doctor, even though he barely features in the story. Yeah. A solid 10 out of 10.
Yep.
Lillian Robbins says, running late. Terry Miles says they're watching Doctor Who.
Yep.
And I told her they changed the recording time without telling me. I only found out a little while ago.
Of course, if you'd listened to the show, Kirby, then you would have known that. In fact, same goes for everyone.
Adam,
I listened to the show and took part in it last week.
Jeffrey.
Hang on.
I still didn't know what time we were starting.
Sorry. Apparently, Debbie has got a little bit extra from Jeffrey.
Yeah, I shared Kirby's post to see if we could get any more interest, and Jeff Waddle came back with, it's nowhere near as good as the novel it comes from.
Ooh.
There you go.
Oh, there's always one.
Right, okay. While certain people absorb some text, we're going to play this one. Hopefully it will play at normal loudness. From Andy Nolan.
Well, hello, 20 megabytes. It's Andy here, sitting here with a bottle of Sam with Gwen. I've just been doing a load of mining, and I've been watching Human Nature and the Family of Blood. They're crackers, aren't they? I mean, they really are. These are two very tightly scripted episodes with a story that absolutely belts along. It's not stretched over two parts. There is an obvious two-part and stretched over that, if that makes any sense whatsoever. But there's no padding, there's no slack. It moves at a real pace, but it moves in a way that you can still follow the story, you can still understand what's going on. I think the fact that you're thrown at the very beginning, almost halfway through, because you don't get the build up, you're in there, and then it's sort of almost flashback to explain why you get there. And I think this is, this is the Martha story, isn't it? About she stepping into her own, being the person to take the Doctor forward, somebody the Doctor trusts. He gave her the key in the last episode, now he's given her his life. Yes. What more trust can there be in that? You don't find out what he's doing until part of the way through, and then you understand what he's doing. And the watch is quite intriguing, because if he's there in the room with him, perhaps he's speaking to Latimer, perhaps he should have been speaking to the Doctor. The Doctor's got the sonic screwdriver there, and he's got his watch there, but does he actually wonder what they are? I mean, he must think, why have I got a watch here? Why does he carry the watch with him? I mean, I don't wear a watch myself. I haven't owned a watch in 30-odd years. But, I have a mobile phone. I've played other things with time on it. Surely he would need his watch with him to tell him the time, especially when he's a teacher. He knows when to go to lessons, when lessons will finish. So a little bit of a plot hole, but it's fascinating is the fact, you know, he's hiding himself. He's managed to deactivate one of his hearts, because when the matron Joan examines him, she only hears one heartbeat. And it must be so frustrating for Martha, you know, knowing what she knows, knowing who she is, and to have to be that subservient. I mean, it's really interesting, especially at the moment with the story about racism in cricket. I don't know, Kirby, you may have heard about this, but, you know, the casual racism we saw there and sexism, you know, even from Joan to one of her own breed, sex, you know, it's sort of accepting that this is the way it was. You know, how can a woman be a doctor, let alone a black woman be a doctor? But, you know, we are talking 1913. The world was a very different place and was about to become even more different. And yet, 5 years' time, yeah, the world would have changed by so much more than just what a war would have done. But the doctor himself, you know, being a human being, I mean, we saw at the end, you know, what could have been. You know, he could have married, become a father, become a grandfather. I'm assuming the end of the grandchildren are safe. It's because the family had taken over and there had been sort of devastation or something like that. And, you know, the grandchildren were saved. And then we saw him dying. And, yeah, that's interesting, because that's an alternate line. You know, the line, the simple life that perhaps he sometimes does want. But he knew he couldn't do that. Martha knew he couldn't do that. Joan knew he couldn't do that either, because he has to be the doctor. And, you know, this is what the doctor does. It's just the way that Martha talks, you know. She says, you know, so I'm in love with him, and, you know, I'm his companion. I'm more than just his friend. I am someone who looks after him. And the doctor realizing that, yeah, he's lonely because he has his ephemeral companion. To be interesting, if Joan had gone with him, how that dynamic would have worked out. But, you know, she knew she couldn't. It was a world that she could not fit into. You know, who knows what would have happened to her. You know, we didn't see her at the end. I just wonder what, you know, where she ended up. And the family of blood, I think we never quite got their background, did we? You know, everything was just hinted at that. You know, I think it's because of the way we picked it up as you went along, you went to what they were trying to do. Yeah, there were mayflies. They had a 3-month lifespan. Well, given the fact that one's in a star, one's in some sort of collapsing universe, one's in the middle of a scarecrow, presumably Baines wouldn't have actually lasted much longer. You know, presumably he would have died in 3 months, or did the doctor somehow manage to spend them so that they did live forever? I mean, that's what they said at the end. So it's never explained how that would work. But mirrors are going to be, you know, creepy from then on. With Latimer, seeing glimpse of the future, understanding what he is. You know, he's in the army with I can't remember the guy's name. I'm assuming that he was his junior. He was subordinate. But he never called him sir. In fact, they went to the same school. They presumably went and joined the army and joined as officers. So. Interesting, I mean, the older boy would have been, 17, so he was 18. So if we're talking, you know, something on the Somme, probably about 1915, he would only be 20. Was Latimer, how old would he be? Because you look at him in the story, he's only, 13, 14? You know, even in 1918, then, he would have been, 19. So you never actually understand what it says. Or was he one of those that lied about his age and joined up early? You don't know. But it's interesting seeing him as a soldier and knowing to turn right. There you go. There's a bit of prophetic future. The end of it, I think, was absolutely wonderful. It's something for me, it's quite emotional. My own father served in the Second World War as a Halifax navigator. And one of my grandfathers served on the Western Front of the Great War. And Remember the Sunday, which is coming up soon, is a very, very personal for me. And I'm afraid to find a few tears in my eyes watching that, because having gone with my father to many remembrance services, and he has a friend who he was brought up with and who died age 22. You know, for him, he's one of those that their names live forevermore. And it's for me, that is very, very personal, quite emotional. This really was, I mean, we're getting into the absolute peak of Tennant with this and what's coming up now, and just him showing who is the doctor, who is this man of ice and fire and rage and compassion. He's such a complex character, and it's someone like Martha who's helping to show, you know, we're seeing it, you know, she's like the everyman character. So seeing it through her eyes, you're understanding who this person is, who is the doctor. And the beginning, the song, well, the end, you know, he who would valiant be, because the doctor is a pilgrim, he's on a journey, he's travelling. And also, you get the master mentioned. Was that a subtle joke? Who knows? Anyway, be seeing you.
Well, thank you, Andy.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Andy.
Yes.
Right. So, We have
Andy, your efforts are appreciated.
They are indeed. Mary, you have some blurb from Linda and Terry Miles.
I do, and it is titled "The Doctor and Martha Are Being Chased by," in quotes, "the family." So the doctor becomes human. Martha says at one point, "God, you're a rubbish as a human." Of all the times he could arrive on Earth, he lands in England just before World War I. Baines was good, played by Harry Lloyd. He portrayed being taken over by the alien very well. Baines walks into the family's spacecraft was very reminiscent of Star Trek IV, when they parked a Klingon bird of prey on Golden Gate Park. Martha kept her cool when racism and sexism raised its ugly head. She still seems to be in love with the doctor from her reaction to Matron kissing the doctor. Ooh. We later find out it is not jealousy, but worry, as him falling in love was not on the list of things to watch out for. The little bit at the end with Latimer as an old man at a war memorial was very timely, as we will be commemorating Armistice Day on Thursday. Mm-hmm. By the way, the doctor dealt with the family. It's no wonder he doesn't do domestics. No mention of Saxon this week. He must have won the election. Next, Blink, another Dr. Light episode. P.S. The episode one, Flux, was a bit too heavy on introducing new characters. Boy, I agree. And a bit too busy. I agree with that, too. Let's see how much Chumpnull cocks it up before passing judgment. As it's only six episodes long, I think I might have to watch it again to see if it grows on me. Okay.
So, well, thank you very much.
Oh, Master?
Yes. Yes.
Slight deviation, but Jeffrey Waddle has posted on Facebook about Flux Episode 2. Absolutely effing outstanding episode of Who.
You can't resist spoilers, can you? It was very good. Enjoyable.
Well, no, I find it very interesting because remember, he doesn't really like New Who.
One minute he does. The next minute he doesn't.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
He's in the Ben Shoveler fan club.
Yeah.
He changes.
Member number 001.
Stuff coming through on the live feed. Lillian Robbins says, I didn't listen last week. I was at a Halloween party. Reese Parton, Volume 2, a book of excuses there. Well done, Lillian. And Alan T. Butcher says, well done, Debbie, for standing up and demonstrating there is at last as much to say about something good as something bad. All too many podcasts don't understand this. Alan.
Yeah. It feels like so bad to not wax lyrical about something you absolutely adore.
No, absolutely. And it's nice that we all like it. Well, I love that. That's great. Right, so we've got this.
Hello, 20 Minute Map Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
I have a new computer mouse, which has a pulsating blue light, which seems familiar. Human Nature and Family Blood by Paul Cornell. This story takes the opportunity to contrast between the timid and caring John Smith and the arrogant Doctor. Racism bad, war bad, apparently. Martha gets to look after the Doctor for a change, but she does not enjoy that either. As part of his farewell to the universe in The End of Time, the Tenth Doctor will visit Joan Redfern's great-granddaughter, who wrote a book.
Yes.
Harry Lloyd is a good choice to play Jeremy Baines, who is possessed by an alien. We get Am I a Good Man? For the first time.
Oh, yes.
That is an impressive balloon that Sister of Mine has. It survives two battles, a spaceship explosion,
it's part of her,
and being trapped into a mirror. We had a good start to the new series with the Halloween apocalypse. It was enjoyable and well made. Sheffield being too near Leeds is a football reference. Mm. Leeds is a rival club to Liverpool. Dog-like creatures having individual humans is a role reversal. Bye for now.
Bang on for me, and bang on form.
And bang on me going. Love you lots, everybody.
Bye, Deb.
Bye.
Don't we love Deb?
Goodbye.
Rest of the reviews.
Yeah. Eh? All right. Right then. So that leaves Mr. Ben Shoveler to dictate a piece of writing from Mr. Alan T. Butcher.
Time Lord convertible, or didn't all this happen to the Seventh Doctor as well? Dear 20 megabyters. Then follows loads of words, some of them big, some of them small, some of them rich, some of them I can't. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you very much. Moving on. Oh, you want the bits in between?
Sadly, yes.
Well, that's a shame. I'll give it my best shot then. Here we go. Time Lord convertible, or didn't all this happen to the Seventh Doctor as well? This is how I imagine Alan T. Butcher speaks. Dear 20 megabiters. He's turning in very slowly. He's turning into Brian Blessed.
Rumpole of the Bailey, yes.
The family of blood, human nature, is of course a closely studied parable about denial as a coping... I can't do that for too much longer. Sorry, my throat.
How are you going to keep that up?
I could for a while. And then I'll turn into an old man from London. The family of blood, human nature, is of course a closely studied parable about denial as a coping mechanism and its potential for negative outfalls. Clearly, the consequences of the Doctor for once trying to wait it out his antagonists rather than confronting them leads to suffering for many in the local community, in particular to Miss Redfern, who is effectively misled, and to his alter ego, John Smith, whose existence in some ways is not real, but whose personal relationships are substantive and are tragically cut down in order to deal with reality. It is sobering to remember, however, that when the Doctor does confront matters directly, people often suffer and die anyway. Though it is less frequent that the Doctor does. Yes. We used to a lot. We also learn that Viserys Targaryen.
Denerys is the first name. I don't know how you say the last name. Denerys.
Well, as I said before, Mary, all you've got to do is say it like you know it. So we'll grow again on that. We also learn that Viserys Targaryen spent some time on Earth at Farringdon School for Boys when younger and got taken over by some strange creature, which perhaps explains his later behaviour if explanation is needed. When he escaped his supposed perpetual torment as a scarecrow but kept straw for hair, and returned home with a view to taking control of Westeros. What does that mean?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Alan, if you're listening.
It's a Game of Thrones reference.
Ah.
Oh, right. Well, in that case, I've got absolutely no idea. All in all, the family of blood and human nature is undoubtedly an exceptionally interesting and enjoyable story, despite having an ending which seems both perfunctory and over-sadistic on the Doctor's part. The disappointing ending does not seem to lessen the quality of the rest of the story and the general appreciation for it. The lack of a start to the story, unsatisfactory though it may be, is used well to enhance the intrigue and mystery of the scenario. The whole cast is exceptional, and David Tennant in his dual role gets the opportunity to give the performance of his time as Doctor Who and John Smith, ably facilitated by tender and moving performances by Jessica Hines. It's said that a story needs a beginning, a middle, and an end, but this proves that you can suffice with just a middle if the idea and execution is good enough. The story is perhaps two episodes too short, as it starts halfway through the narrative, and the end is nothing more than an ill-justified list of things that were not shown properly. Well, I don't know. I mean, it was wrapped up. They wrapped it up quickly, but what would you rather have? A bit less of the story or a quicker, you know, quick wrapping up? But hey, he's allowed an opinion.
Yes.
Next up, I'm just not saying if it's right or not. It's not. Next up, Doctor Who and the Dodgy... I'm joking. Next up, Doctor Who and the Dodgy Playlist or the Sparrow Paradox. Those are my thoughts. Counselor.
Alan T. Butcher!
Now, just because he didn't make that particular obligatory comment, I'm going to play it anyway. There we go.
I did notice the lack of the, the Oasis.
Deliberate. And not allowed, Alan. Not allowed. Right.
Well, maybe Alan should now try and fit an Oasis song title in, a different Oasis song title into every one of his reviews.
No, I've got the blooming jingle ready to play.
I think my idea is much better. We've done Some Might Say. We can come back to Some Might Say, Adam. We're just going to try something different for a while. So, Alan... We need a diff, so maybe go with Wonderwall, or you could try and get in. Well, the first track on the third album is called "In the Bushes." I mean, you could try and get that in, but I'm not sure that would ever happen in Doctor Who. So, thank you very much.
Hang on, I can now play the. Where's it gone? I see it somewhere. Oh, it's obviously not in my priority jingles folder, so I'm not going to play it. Well, maybe I could play it.
Oh, has anyone read Robert's?
Has he got one then?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know. No. No one's read Roberts. Who would like to?
I will.
Go on then.
Let me get up there. Now my review of Human Nature, Family of Blood. One of the better New Who stories. Nasal olfactory ventriloquism aside. You know, I've read the book for this and can't remember the book, but it's easy enough to recall the story. All this disguising as a human in the watch is just to get us ready for later reveals. Set up nicely here. Though, again, they have to put in some Martha fancying the doctor crap when Martha's jealous of Mr. Smith's relationship. Grr. I think I actually prefer the doctor's Mr. Smith. At least it means that Tennant doesn't have to do his campy doctor stuff. A good cast in this one. Except father of mine, who was so over the top it was ridiculous. Almost like Richard Briers in Paradise Towers. Baines was played so well, though, you couldn't imagine any other actor in the role. Though I hated the scarecrows with the head lolling to one side. It's as bad as the Zygon smirking and snarling with pointed teeth. Pointed teeth! And I'm sick of the movement coach, who seems to do the same crap each time. Love seeing them get mowed down as it was done in the way that didn't glorify the action or glorify the guns. It was done in a horrific way, well handled. And the little coda with Latimer, thanks to the watch, he knew to avoid the bomb. A happy ending of sorts in the shadow of such a wicked war. I loved how the doctor dealt with them as well. All in all, quite good.
He was a bit grumpy during that particular piece of writing, I think.
Yes.
But there you go.
Okay. So he's the only one of us that did not give it a fully, this is one of the best.
Indeed it was. So it's probably just as well he came on and said it though, isn't it? Right then, we can do this. It's Doctor Who News with a good old news round theme tune. And play that for a while. The Halloween Apocalypse overnight viewing figures, which is actually too bad. 4.43 million this day and age. That's quite a good amount, I have to say. It says the overnight viewing figure.
It's a different world, isn't it? It's a different world.
Well, it says here, the overnight viewing figure is slightly down on last season, not 2 years ago, Skyfall, but higher than it. I thought it was. That was Skyfall, but higher than the majority of the last 12 episodes. So, yeah, it's pretty good. Halloween Apocalypse Appreciation Index, it says 76. The Appreciation Index, or AI, is a measure of how much the audience enjoyed the program. The score out of 100 is compiled by a specially selected panel of about 5,000 people who go online and rate the comment on the programs. The previous series opener, Spyfall Part 1, so that just got called Skyfall in the previous comment. Spyfall Part 1, New Year's Day 2020, bloody ages ago, achieved a score of 82. Okay, fair enough. Right then, sad news. Legend Bob Baker has died.
Yes, I saw
at the
that.
Age of 82. Of course, he's very, very well known. His sort of claim to fame is as one of the creators of K9, and also the creators of the K9 series that ended up going to Australia and whatnot. So he's also done lots and lots of other stuff with Doctor Who and Z-Cars and all sorts of stuff. Absolute legend of Doctor Who, and it's sad, sad day to lose such a very talented man, in fact, a very creative man. There's some pictures, if you go to DoctorWhoNews.net, of War of the Sontarans. Actually, it's a very pretty episode, so these obviously are very pretty pictures. Very good images. It says it can be streamed on the iPlayer and Netflix, apparently. Didn't know that. Amazon Prime, BritBox, depending on your location. And it says, yesterday the news that actor Clifford Rose had died at the age of 92. And he was in Warrior's Gate. He played Rorvik, the captain of the privateer ship that transported the time-sensitive Tharals. Yes, actually, I remember. I know he also used to be very good at playing Germans in certain dramas on the BBC. Another sort of stalwart of the 70s and 80s British television. And apparently said film roles included Pirates of the Caribbean, On the Stranger Tides, and The Iron Lady, and he had a small role as the Dean of Windsor in The Crown. So he obviously kept his working life going to a very old age, so it's a sad loss. So that's it for Doctor Who News.
No, it's not. See, this is, you do this every week. What you've got to do... is you're the chairman of the board, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got to say, is there any other business before you move on from that point? Because other people might
I haven't finished yet. I was just going to
you
go.
You said that's the end of Doctor Who News.
Well, I just wanted to say, before we move on to the end of Doctor Who News, is there's stuff coming through on the live feed. Alan T. Butcher said, sorry for my omission. It seems at some point I deleted a paragraph. Oh, I see. So that was quite... it's probably a paragraph... containing a certain line. That's unfortunate.
Some might say someone doesn't know the difference between delete and backspace.
Some might say somebody should proofread what they're sending first.
Go on, Ben, we've got some more. Well, writing speeches, you know, I mean, that's... I'm appalled. I'm never voting paper again. That would make it no times then.
Ben.
Sorry.
You what do you mean?
So you're allowed to sit there saying you hate everyone and everything about Liverpool and the whole of the North West. And I'm not even allowed to say I don't like a political party.
No. I'm saying, Ben, you said there was some more news that you were going to tell us.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought you were telling me off.
Yeah, it was just something I saw earlier in the week, which was a very interesting interview and an article relating to Rose Tyler and the possible return of the character to the show. It's all revolved around what happened in the last week's episode, the first episode, and the fact that there was two mentions of the Tyler or Rose, because it was Outpost Rose, wasn't it? And yes. There was another, the other mention of it. Well, no, it was kind of like a nod to when Christopher Eccleston met Billy Piper. They said, run for your life.
Yeah, run.
That's what happened, obviously, when... so people would obviously jump the gun, and that means that Rose is now coming back. Added to that, obviously, John Barrowman was meant to be coming back, and I think he's... has he been in it yet? Was he in the Christmas one or something?
Yeah.
He was in... he was in a Jodie Whittaker episode, yeah.
He's in a couple of Jodie Whittaker episodes.
Is he meant to be in this as a bit of a surprise?
I don't know. I don't know if he's supposed to be in any of the forthcoming episodes or not. I know there was talk that he got kicked out because of all that ridiculous stuff that came out in the media about him.
Well, there was speculation that he was meant to be taking part in Series 13, which I thought, is this not Series 13 then? Is this Series 12A or something?
No, 13.
Well, there was speculation that he was meant to be in it, but then they were saying that... so it might be next series they're talking about then, that he was meant to be in it a little bit, and maybe they're going to change that character for Rose's character. So keep your ears to the ground and your noses to the flowers, because Rose might be back.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, is that it? Sorry, I thought we were going to carry on. Thank you, Ben. That's a very interesting. Talenty Butch on the live feed says, it should be noted that while some... you kid. Okay.
I still want a different Oasis title every week now.
It should be noticed that while... that the Doctor's extreme vengeance is out of character. In fact, this may be a foreshadowing of his Time Lord Victorious phase. Actually, it's not. I think I did rather well. I don't often do anti-butcher reading.
Yeah, that's the only sour note in the whole thing, you know, is the Doctor being so vengeful like that.
Yes. Right, before we move on to the sponsors, I just wanted to mention that our family went to see a film called Eternals yesterday in the cinema.
How was it?
What?
How was it?
Very good.
Did it star Louise Redknapp?
That's Eternal.
Oh,
this is Eternals.
There were four of them. No. And if I could remember the other one's name, one was Kelly.
Oh,
I think.
God.
I can't remember who was in Eternal.
I don't know.
B.B. Wynans, probably, because no, you know, but not in the same way.
But anyway, it's epic. I'd say it's about 2.5 hours long, but it feels like an epic film. It's a lot going on in it. You know, lots of sort of well-known people. There are lots of little surprises, little tidbits here and there. Yes, it's typical Marvel brilliance in my view. I do love Marvel. They do like to tell a good story, and they sort of tell it with hard-hitting elements and comedy elements as well. It's romantic. It's very, very good. Very good. Of course, it's they weave it into the Marvel universe, so everything interlocks, although they haven't quite done that with Deadpool and the X-Men, although I know they're likely to do that very soon. And it's a nice little film that we can have before that magnificent Spider-Man series resumes very, very shortly. But yes, I'd highly recommend going to watch Eternals. It's a great film.
I'm afraid, Adam, I'm going to have to dip out, mate, because I've just noticed the time and the wife will give me a kicking.
Oh, dear. They're dropping like flies. Look at this. Okay, but we've got much longer to go, so that's fine. Bye.
But bye. Before I go, I've got a couple of things I want to say before I go.
Uh-oh.
Firstly, happy birthday to my big brother, because he'll never hear this, but, you know, if I'm dead, he can then listen to this, and it'll be like I've said it to him for fresh the right. First time. So,
okay.
Happy birthday, Tim. He's 49. That's really quite old.
Young.
And firstly, you know, we always do our little sign-off bits. You can clip this bit and stick it on the end.
No, I won't
want.
Be doing that, as you okay. Well know.
Okay, here we go. All mentions of Liverpool and Merseyside in this episode were in jest and meant no offence to anyone. All members of the podcasting Liverpool and Merseyside are ace. All complaints should be sent to Adam Pearson, hateliverpool@gmail.com. See you next week.
I did emphasise we were talking about Liverpool Football Club and certain members of their supporting... anyway, I'll move back on. It's Doctor Who News. No, it's not. I've done that. But it's whowon.co.uk.
Is that whowon.co.uk?
As I emphasised, we're sort of nearly halfway through November.
9 years ago I was doing that.
Good. yes, people need to buy stuff for their geeky, nerdy friends and loved ones, don't they? And there's a couple of places that we are sponsored by that sell things, good amount of choice of things that you could buy for your loved ones, like the latest products, the Fifth Doctor Lost Resort, Ashes of Eternity, that's the Ninth Doctor story, 10th Doctor Dalek Universe 2, War Master 6 Killing Time, Ninth Doctor Adventures Respond to All Calls, and Empire of the Shadows. These are all sort of audio CD thingies. Of course, Who One also do a large array of book publications, including At Child's End, which we featured on the show many weeks ago when we had Sophie on, Doctor Who Atlas, the 2020-2022 annual. Of course, it's still 2021, so that means that sort of runs over to next year. They don't do a 2023 one. I don't know. Age of Chaos, which is looks like a graphic novel, featuring the Sixth Doctor. In the Blood, which is a paperback by Jenny T. Colgan. It says, so many people out there, Doctor, wanting so many things, wanting, terrible things they want, terrible things. I think that might be a novel. And, of course, Doctor Who Magazine 565, which if you don't live in the UK, it's a good means to acquire. Because sometimes, as I am led to believe, that when you're trying to get publications like Doctor Who magazine in America, it can be a bit tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Not generally available in your normal newsagents. I'm just going to see what figurines are going to become available.
Tend to get the Doctor Who magazines like 2 or 3 months later. Yeah. Here,
they have Dalek figures from the History of the Daleks, History of Daleks 1, History of Daleks 2, Second Doctor and TARDIS, which is a very pretty little set, Unit 1971 Claws of Axos set, and the Terror of the Zygon set, which of course features the Doctor in his Scottish garb, and of course Companions of the Fourth Doctor, which is Sarah Jane and the two Romanas. So those are all available at whoon.co.uk. And where we mentioned, what did we mention this a while back? Oh, it was Bernice Summerfield, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of Bernice Summerfield things. The New Adventures of Bernice Summerfield, Six Lost in Translation. Who plays Bernice Summerfield, by the way?
Oh, Lisa Bowerman.
Yes. She's a very well-known actress on British TV. Usually plays quite dour characters in police dramas. New Adventures of Bernice Summerfield 4, Ruler of the Universe. And then there's the New Adventures of Bernice Summerfield 5, Buried Memories. It's a shame they haven't really brought her properly into current Doctor Who, really, because she'd make a good addition to the visual version. And there's a Story of So Far 1, Story So Far 2, and Treasury. All these are Bernice Summerfield stories available on audio, and they also have the books and the CDs. There's one of the books which is called Inside Story. I did a rather large feature on Who Won this week. I hope they appreciate it. Lavazzi, I did get an email about possible new things coming through on the Lavazzi line, so I'm going to have a quick peep into that. Has anybody, while I'm looking into this, watched anything they particularly like? Has anybody watched that Squid Game that is not recommended for children yet? I haven't watched it. I don't really want to watch it, to be fair.
I've only
watched
a couple episodes, and it was just so, I don't know, gross that I didn't.
You didn't carry on with it. Yeah. Somebody said you have to watch
no
the third episode.
I haven't watched it at all.
Somebody said you have to watch the three episodes to get hooked, so you probably did a good job there, Mary. So yes, Doctor Who scarves. A Fourth Doctor obviously is the most iconic, you know, even on the Big Bang Theory, if any reference to Doctor Who is always going to be the Fourth Doctor. But I always appreciated the Big Bang Theory referencing Doctor Who. Has been referenced in a few other American thingies, so...
I tell you, I'm beginning to get a little disappointed with Young Sheldon. I realize they're going to be ending it after the season, but
no spoilers then. Oh, we're currently on series 5.
Yes.
Hello, anybody there?
Yes.
Don't spoil it. We're enjoying series 5.
I wasn't going to. Series 5 has got just a different vibe to it.
I'm enjoying it. So Doctor Who merchandise for cosplaying the 7th and 4th Doctors available. And of course, you can get the 5th Doctor's jumper. And there's also gloves and ties and bags and whatnot. So, and also there's Star Trek merchandise and stuff that isn't related to any geeky thing at all. You can get normal knitted wear from Lavazzi. Just go on their website, have a good look around. And if you like producing fan fiction, they're happy to present it in their Doctor Who blog as well. And finally, iwheroes.co.uk. If you're in the UK, you can receive mail and items through the post. If you're on the Isle of Wight on holiday, just nip into their shop down Scarrett's Lane. Lovely people, and they've got such a large array of geeky items in them, and they do Warhammer, and they do Dungeons and Dragons products, and they have obviously the main thing that people go in there for is the large array of, I've said large array a lot today, haven't I, of Funko Pops. There seems to be a big run on these characters that are actually gingerbread men versions of them, which is a bit weird. Like there's a Funko Pop vinyl Marvel Holiday Iron Man in gingerbread. It's not actually gingerbread, but it's made to look like a gingerbread man. Same with Captain America and things like that.
But they're not edible.
No, they're not edible. No, they're Funko Pops. So, yeah, lots and lots of things. Go to iwheroes.co.uk and just browse their website. They've got lots of, I mean, obviously we know that places like Forbidden Planet are available, and people automatically go in there and search Forbidden Planet. Have a look on places like this, because they have things that are probably more larger lines, because they specialize in Funko Pops, than places like Forbidden Planet do, who sort of have great stuff, but maybe not the thing you might be looking for. And it's always good to support the smaller businesses as well. So there you go. That's the sponsors. Next week, we're going to be looking at one of the most renowned Doctor Who stories of the new era. And I'm really looking forward to one of the only
new Who's that my wife has watched, and she's watched it many times.
Called 42.
It's scary.
But I asked her if she wanted to say something next week, and she said, nope.
No, fair enough. Oh. We could always get her to record an audio and send it in.
I may.
So it's Blink next week. So that'll be fun, won't it?
At what time?
7:30. Even if I have to jump out of the TV room and come straight in here and record it, we're aiming to be on at 7:30.
I thought you had a TV right there.
I'm not. I watch it with the family. I'm trying to get them to watch Doctor Who over the last year or so. It's been very difficult, but. That's me, Deb, and Isabella have watched both the first two episodes of the series. And I think Deb's managed to stay awake through both of them, which is pretty good, because she always gets tired at that time of night anyway. So that is it for this week.
Are we going to give our comments on the second episode?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it then. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions to the show this week and forever. And anybody who feels as if they'd like to contribute, please do so. It'd be nice to have some new blood as well as the regular contributors. And if you'd like to do that via the live feed and watching us on the Facebook page, which is a 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. We also have the media of email 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Or you could just send us a message through the Facebook page or whatever. And if you can think of any other ways you'd like to send us messages that I have not outlined or we don't have available to. It's funny, I was just thinking about people listening to the very early episodes. The email address was completely different. So we might have a load of feedback about those really old episodes somewhere in the ether. But until next time.
Have you ever checked some of that old email address?
No, I don't. I just alluded to that fact, actually. So until next time, I think it's next time. Just make sure I'm not busy next Sunday, but scratch my nostrils whilst doing that. November or next time.
No, you should go.
I'm just scratching. I'm not going to blow snot at my nose or anything. And yes, until next time, thank you for listening and watching, taking part in the show. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye.
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an ABV Services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk, and iwheroes.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.